this episode of GeoTalk, we open the door on the new craze that is Munzee. We give you a quick update on the mega events occurring in Australia and New Zealand. And we offer not one, but two prizes for you to win. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to episode 75 of GeoTalk for July 2011. And I know it's right near the end of the month, but we've snuck it in, thankfully. Anyway, those of us here in Australia and New Zealand, we know that the days are slowly getting longer and the weather is getting, well, no, it's not really getting warmer. Who's kidding us? It's been very wet through most parts of southern Australia and probably New Zealand as well. It's been a very wet winter, but hopefully the days, you know, are on the turn. They're going to get a bit warmer and we're going to have some better caching weather over the next few days. In fact, actually, this weekend in Sydney, it was actually gorgeous on Saturday, and I took Zach out caching. We had to do a cache check on one of mine. I've got to do another one in the next day or two. It's probably a good time, actually, to consider now that the weather's starting to warm up in the southern hemisphere, to do a bit of a check on some of your caches, some that may have be temporarily disabled, and some that just, you know, you just might have an inkling that just need a bit of TLC. So anyway, probably a good thing to put into your diary in the next few weeks, do a bit of a check on some of your caches. Now, I mentioned in the intro, Munzee. Now, if you asked me a month ago what the heck was Munzee, I would have scratched my head and had no idea. But I noticed Zel Goriath through his Facebook page. He's over in the UK, and hi to Zel Goriath. Hope you're doing well over there. He mentioned a bit about Munzee and was, you know, getting into it over in the UK. And then I've noticed also on Google Plus and also on a few other blogs of some geocaching friends that they're starting to get into it. Now, if you're not too sure what it is, it's a bit like virtual geocaching where you have to go to a particular destination. But to prove that you were there, you then have to use your smartphone, whether it's an Android phone or an iPhone, to then take a picture or scan the QR code. Now, QR code's a bit like those box-shaped barcodes that have many different tiles in them. Now, to make sure that you're actually at the right location, not only do you have to scan the QR code, but you then have to be within a few meters of where the Munzee is registered. And then you scan it, and if you're all it's all good and you're in the right spot, then it gives you a point, and then you move on to the next one. And you also get points for those that you own and get scanned. So they've started popping up. Now, I checked a few weeks ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, and there weren't very many in Australia. I think there was only one when I looked. It was down in Wollongong. There are many more now. Now, I'm not going to even tell you what they are, because I'm going to make it the trivia question later in this episode. And if you want to check out a little bit more, one blog worth checking is Daryl W4. He's the host of Cacher Maniacs, also on the Geocaching Podcast and Cacher the Roundtable. He's got a blog entry where he's testing out different materials in which to print out Munzees and to see which ones last best in the weather, because you can put them inside caches, but you can also stick them to the outside or hide them somewhere on external features. So that's well worth checking out and following that blog to see how those Munzees go. Those of you who are long-time listeners of the podcast will know that I'm a big fan of OpenStreetMap, which is the Wikipedia of mapping. And you'll also know that from listening to the podcast that you can download maps, particularly for Garmin units and also for Magellan units. Now, I had a friend of mine, Calypso64, who was here a few weeks ago trying to get some OpenStreetMaps, some runnable ones, into his Garmin Map 62. And we tried the conventional method, or we started to use the conventional method that I use on my Map 60, and found that it wasn't quite going to work. But I noticed when we were setting it up that there's now an extra option when you download that it's not only a Mac installer or a Windows installer or a file for Linux, but there's also a file now for SD cards. And we tried that out on his unit. We downloaded the SD card version and just copied it straight onto the SD card of his 62 unit and put it in a folder called Garmin. And lo and behold, it actually works. And it was much, much more simple than the steps that I have to go through with the 60. Now, I then tried it out on my Nuvi 1350, the unit I use in the car for getting around from spot to spot and also for finding caches, and found a similar thing. The only difference is I had to name the folder map. Now, there's a little bit of instructions I have to give for you. What I'll do is I'll type up a page on the instructions. It is simple, but it's probably best to show you the steps on how to download OpenStreetMap data into a file for your Garmin unit, whether it be a Map 62, one of the Oregons, the new Dakotas, or for the Nuvi series. So you can check that out on the blog podcast at geotalkpodcast.com. Is definitely going to go down as the year of the mega events down under. We've got one scheduled for Easter in Albury-Wodonga on the Victorian-New South Wales border, and that's certainly chugging along. There was an update to their webpage and also to more information about accommodation and so forth. So check that out. That's the Oz mega event to be held in the Twin Cities of Albury-Wodonga. But there was also an update from Moneydork over in New Zealand regarding New Zealand's plans for a mega event. Now, originally, this mega event was going to be held in Christchurch in October of 2012. Now, up until June, that was still going ahead, but I've been told by Moneydork that unfortunately, due to the quake that they had, or the aftershock, however you want to look at it, in June, it's now been decided that it's probably a good move not to have it in Christchurch, at least not in the short term. So the event's going to be held in Dunedin. Another beautiful town, one city actually I haven't been to in New Zealand, so I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm hoping to get down to this event. So the New Zealand mega event in October of 2012 will be held in Dunedin, and then the plan is that they'll hold one every 2 years, alternating between the North and South Island. So fingers crossed that Christchurch will finally get its turn in 2016. I'll give you a link in the show notes to both the Oz mega event and the New Zealand mega event on the website. Now, I promised you at the start of this episode that we have not one but two giveaways in this edition of the podcast. Now, the first one, a big thanks to James, who looks after AustralianGeocachingEssentials.com.au, one of the online geocaching stores that are available for you to purchase all manner of geocaching items. Now, James is also the editor and publisher of Geocaching in Australia magazine, and he's kindly agreed to donate 6 copies of the magazine to GeoTalk listeners. Now, all you have to do to get in the running for this particular one is send a Twitter message. And all you have to do is send a message on Twitter. Now, hopefully most of you, if not all of you, are signed up to Twitter. And just mention the GeoTalk podcast. So just send a message talking about geocaching, whether it's about the podcast, whether it's about the Geocaching in Australia magazine. It could be about anything, really. Maybe the upcoming Wallabies victory in the World Cup. Just make sure that you include the at GeoTalk podcast handle in your message. And if you do that, between now and the 15th of August, you'll go into the draw to win one of the 6 copies of Geocaching in Australia magazine, courtesy of James from AustralianGeocachingEssentials.com.au. Well, it's time now to head across the ditch over to Hamilton, and someone I'm looking forward to meeting up with in September, Alan, Radio Nut 50. Take it away.
Hi there, Darren, and to the listeners. This is Alan, Radio Nut 50, bringing some geocaching notes from Hamilton, New Zealand. Well, it was great to hear last month's GeoTalk with an item of the Milestones event in Oamaru by Martin, the organist, and his spot interviews with the many attendees, including one with Robert, the famous bit sprayer, and his silent responses. You know, joining in events is an excellent way to get some of your questions answered and to find out a bit more about the strangely addictive hobby that we share. During this month, I did receive a quick note from one of the fast climbers of our cache totals ladder in New Zealand, Sting 1606 from Cromwell. They've run a number of social and CI2 events in the wonderful central Otago town of Cromwell recently. Keep on the good work, guys. I've also received a note from an Oz cacher to Bluefish, who's been spreading the word in New Zealand on behalf of a Canadian cacher by the name of Los Patos, of a proposed large event to be published in Sydney in 2014 as a gathering of Rotarian cachers. His forum published in the New Zealand Society page at forums.gps.org.nz has resulted in a few comments on whether geocaching events can be called like this with an exclusive target audience, so this matter may be worthwhile watching. But the idea of an event that encourages members of a community group to gather and share their geocaching experiences doesn't sound all that bad to me, as long as it is open to all attendees. Now, in the last podcast I mentioned, I've advanced into the world of the Android smartphone, and I'd be reporting on some progress. Well, the dead of winter's not really an ideal time to try out a new caching toy, but I must say that my experience really has not been too favourable. The main reason for this, though, is that my move into the real smartphone user world, after having quite a lot of years with various Nokia phones culminating in a good reliable E71, was somewhat on the cheap. My cell phone provider was offering a free Samsung 5503 Android phone for users prepared to sell their soul for them for another 2 years. Having no plans to change provider anyhow, I was happy to accept this gift, but the little plasticky device I got is a bit short on screen real estate, and the GPS inside is pretty much back to the old Garmin GPS 2 era when we started out caching for its performance. So even with the best geocaching application running, I find that the experience is not up to using the Garmin Oregon like we do anyhow. I have dabbled a bit though with the application called CGeo, and after a peek also at the Groundspeak application on someone else's phone, which I'd heard a few bad comments about in the past, I decided it may really be the way to go. I'm, however, poised on a knife edge whether to give up on this device and purchase a real Android phone with a real screen and a proper GPS. So I don't really want to purchase any more apps on this little toy at the moment, since they're not transferable to different hardware. So as the weather improves, and maybe I change to a better piece of hardware, perhaps there'll be more on the RadioNut smartphone experiences next GeoTalk. A footnote to this thought, though, is there's one app that I have found interesting, and it's called GDAK, Geocaching Droid Army Knife, and it's an Android front end on your Windows GSAK database. All you do is you straight copy your GSAK database into your memory card, put it in your phone, and run GDAK. And there you have all of the caches of your PC database in your hand, complete with all the downloaded logs and everything you've had in your GSAK, ready to use in the field. Kind of fun. So with that short update from New Zealand, Darren, it's back over to you.
Thanks very much for that information, Alan, particularly the GDAK app. I think I might have to download that and give that a spin before I come over in September. Now, it's time for the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, and I was talking about Munzees early on, and I did mention there was only one in Australia a few weeks ago. In fact, there was none in New Zealand. But as of the 30th of July, how many are there now in Australia and New Zealand? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. It might be cold and it might be wet and it might be winter, but there are still geocaching events occurring around the country. So let's have a look at what's occurring in Australia. On the 2nd of August is Page 2 being held in Port Augusta, South Australia. On the 7th of August is the Geocaching New South Wales AGM being held in Carlingford in Sydney. On the 13th of August is a CETO. It's the Kit and Caboolture event being held in Caboolture in Queensland. On the 18th of August is the YP Caches Get Together. That's being held in Wallaroo in the York Peninsula, South Australia. And on the 28th of August is Breaking Camp being held in Parafield in the northern suburbs of Adelaide. If you've got a caching event that you want to highlight on the podcast, don't forget to drop us an email or to call it in on 02 800 50 436. And talking of calling things in, we've got a few calls to get through and two that we actually forgot to put in the last particular podcast, and apologies to that. First one's from the ACT, Growing Up is Optional, who is with a group of caches with an interesting first to find.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Justin from Growing Up is Optional with Brian from Team Doinge and Nick from Team NKJ. We've left the girls back in Mildura. And we're doing a 1.5 hour drive out into the middle of the Mildura Murray Sunset Country to pick up, what's the name of the cache? The Cache of Last Hope. We're going for a first to find, so it's a 3 hour round trip for one first to find. So hopefully we'll get it, and if we get it, or even if we don't get it, we'll give you a call back. All right, see ya.
We might catch up with Growing Up is Optional a little bit later and see how he goes. Also from the ACT, we've got Noikmeister calling in another first to find.
G'day Darren, it's Noikmeister from Canberra here, just calling in a first to find. I've just managed to pick up Mountain Biker Oz's difficulty 4.5 terrain 4.5 find me, first to find. I actually started it last weekend and then found that I had some incomplete data and had to go home and couldn't come back until today, so pretty satisfying first to find. And I'm standing in a spot where I was about to say there'd be an awesome view if I wasn't fogged in. And just while I'm talking to you, the fog is clearing, and it is an awesome view. So typical of Mountain Biker Oz to find such a good spot with a great view, and he puts out some great caches. So thanks, Mountain Biker Oz, for this experience. Oh, and I don't think he'd mind me saying too much that if you can't find the way in, then you can always go back and listen to some old episodes of Geo Talk. Bye.
G'day Darren, it's Buddhakan here from New Zealand, just calling in a milestone, a bit of an unusual one. I've just clocked up a geocache in Shanghai in China, and that makes me just crack the 1,000,000 miles of geocaching, so 1,305 miles in total now, 1,300 caches or thereabouts, 700 miles between each one, and 40 times around the world, and twice to the moon and back. So long-distance caching is my thing, and I enjoy the chance to explore the world while I cache. Thanks for the podcast. Enjoy it. See you later.
Hi, this is Carl. I am a POM from Northcote in Victoria. I'd just like to report a really amazing first find I just made in the past couple of weeks that I thought you guys might be interested in hearing about. Mrs. Iron Pom and I were lucky enough to be on holiday in Iceland, and of course it's nice and sunny there at the moment. It's nice summer's days and 24-hour daylight actually. And we were having a day trip to a place called Kullasuk, which is in Greenland. You can get there from Reykjavik in Iceland by plane, by a very small plane. And have a look around the beautiful little town there. There is one geocache there, GC2CV5C. That's GC2CV5C, and it's imaginatively named Kullasuk. There aren't that many geocaches in the whole of Greenland. Greenland's about the size of India, with the population of about 40,000 people. There's only about 50 or 60 geocaches in the whole place. So I really wanted to get this one. Now the interesting thing is it hadn't actually been or it's been placed about 10 months ago and no one had actually found it. So we're really looking forward to the fact that I may be able to get a first to find on this one. So we landed in the morning in Kullasuk, and it was beautiful sunshine. We landed through across lots of icebergs and pack ice and, you know, just the most amazing scenery. We landed at this tiny little airport on a gravel runway, and we walked with a guide the 3 kilometres into the town along what can be best be described as a terrible road. and saw some, you know, wonderful sights along the way. The people of Kulasuk are mainly Inuit Eskimos, about 90%, and you know, they live a subsistence lifestyle of you know, really shooting polar bears and seals and that kind of thing for food. Anyway, there's a geocache, and there's a first find to be got. So on the way into town, I explained to the guide that about geocaching, and that I wanted to get this geocache very, very, very much. And so he, on the way, he took us to a lookout to look over the village. And the geocache was very close to this. So I made a quick grab for it. And yes, I was the first to find. So 10 months after it had been placed, I got the first to find. I was really elated about that one. And replaced that, and we had a good look around the village, which is, you know, an absolutely remarkable place. The remarkable thing was, when we got back to Iceland, I got a notification that the next day, a lady acacia from Germany had visited, and she was attempting the first to find as well, and she didn't get it, because I got it. She was actually the second to find. So I got the first to find, luckily, by one day, which was great. I've posted a lot of pictures in the listing, so hopefully your listeners will get some pleasure out of having a look at some of those. It's a really, really remarkable place, and we feel very fortunate not only to have visited, but got a remarkable first to find for Australia rather than Germany. Darren, thanks for the show, and thanks for everything. Cheers.
Well, thanks for that call, Carl. That's an amazing find. I don't think many people get to find a cache in Greenland, although it was interesting looking at the cache listing after you pointed it out. There's been quite a lot of finders since you first found it a few weeks ago. I'll put a link in the show notes to that particular cache, because it's a really fascinating location, very bright looking houses. And who knows, maybe I might have to head that, put that on the list of caches that I have to head out to in the not too distant future. Well, let's check in with Growing Up is Optional on the crew to see how they went with that first to find over near Mildura.
Yeah, g'day, Darren. It's Justin from Growing Up is Optional, Nick from NKJ, and Brian from Team Doinge. We've just managed to get to the case of Lost Hope. We're at a very large sand dune in the middle of a very flat mallee area, and we've just opened up the case, and we found we're first to find. So we've got a joint three-way first to find for us. So now, we're on an hour and a half trip back to Mildura. The problem is the whole return trip is going to take 4 hours, and we promised the wise it'll only take 3, so we'll be in trouble, but we've got a first to find, so we don't care. All in all, good day, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
And our final call-in for this podcast is Mike from a WAK team over in Western Australia.
Hi, Darren. It's Mike from WAK team in Mandarin, WA. Just a quick message about our weekend, our last weekend. We went down to Albany to complete the Albany 100 before Tango with Cupcake archived the series, and we were lucky enough to be the last team to go through, so we pulled up all the caches and returned them to Tango on Saturday evening, and had an enjoyable evening with pizza and beer with him. And then he took us out and did the two night caches in Albany, which was a fantastic experience for us because we'd not done night caches before. And then on the Sunday, we finished the Albany 100 because we ran out of daylight the previous day, and then did the ABCD challenge around Albany, which included the Earth Cache out at the Natural Bridge, and of course Albany Quarantine, the oldest cache in WA. Had a fantastic weekend, met up with Tango and learned lots about camo hides, which hopefully we'll put into action around the Mandurah area in the next few months or so. All in all, a great weekend, and 110 caches for the weekend. Thanks, and thanks also for your show, which is greatly enjoyed.
And a big thank you, Mike, and to all our callers this episode for calling in those first to finds, milestones and other stories. Now, don't forget, everyone who gives a call in, if it's your first time around, don't forget to drop us an email with your postal address and we'll send out a GeoTalk path tag. And if you want to get your own path tag, well, you can send in your own voicemail by dialing it in on 02-800-5436. Or if you're over in New Zealand, that's a country code 61, area code 2-800-5436. Or you can drop us an email and you can either attach your audio to the email or you can just write it in and I'll read it out for you. That's geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. And to give you a little more incentive for next episode, for the August edition, if you can get it in before we publish the August episode, which hopefully won't be as late as this one, so send it in sometime before mid-August. And Chris from Jockaroo at jockaroo.com.au, another geocaching store that's online over there in WA, I think. Chris will send out to one lucky caller a Snoopy geocoin, courtesy of jockaroo.com.au. And all you have to do is send us in a story about caching with your dog. So given that it's got Snoopy on the coin, we thought, why not make it a geocaching dog story? So if you go out caching with your dog, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-5436, area code 02, or drop us an email at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Now, long-time listeners of the podcast might know that a while back we used to put out a geo coin for the podcast, and I decided to let one loose and let it travel around the country, around Australia and also in New Zealand, and anyone who came across it had to call in and just say good day to the hotline and you know, whatever they wanted to talk about, whether it was where they found the coin or what they thought about geocaching. Well, it seems as though the coin, it's just clocked up 1,587 kilometres. It's a bit of a slow mover, but we got a call in from Tassie Trekker.
Hi, Tassie Trekker's here. We found GeoTalk GeoCoin in cold case number one and have placed it in detention blue. We love geocaching because it takes us to interesting places and places we haven't been before. Thanks for the cash.
Well, thank you for putting in that call, and drop us an email with your postal address and we'll send you out a path tag in the mail. Well, that's just about all we've got for this episode, but a few quick things before we go. First of all, a big shout out to Team Judda. That's Dave, Julie and David Jr. I met two of you out on the caching trail recently over near Manly after the Geocaching New South Wales event that was out there, and that was well attended. That was a walk from the Spit Bridge to Manly. It was certainly a great walk, and if you're ever coming to Sydney and you're looking at stretching the legs, that's well worth doing. There's about at least half a dozen caches along that route. But big hello to Team Judda. Also to Darth Trader, who sent me a link to a YouTube video that he's put together of a fantastic geocache. Now, this would have to go down in geocaching folklore as one of the best caches that I've ever seen. Now, I should warn you, if you're from the Hunter Valley region around from Newcastle heading inland up towards Singleton, and you want to find this cache, do not watch this video because he gives away exactly how it works, and even if you're thinking about caching there. But otherwise, if you're not from the region or if you decide, well, I need to know how it works, check out the link that I'll give you in the show notes from the geotalkpodcast.com website. It is fantastic. And also, on the subject of YouTube videos, one worth watching and subscribing to is the geocaching vlogger. That's Mabry Man. Now, he's over in the United States, over from the Twin Cities over there. And also a hello to Sir Z Man and Super R, who host the podcast, the Twin Cities Geocaching Podcast over there in the US. But one of their local caches, Mabry Man, has this fantastic geocaching blog on YouTube, and I'll give you a link in the show notes to that as well. He's certainly got a way about him when he goes geocaching. Well, that's all for this episode. Before I go, I better give you the answer to the trivia question. That was, how many Munzees, as of the 30th of July 2011, there are in Australia and New Zealand? Now, I mentioned a few weeks ago, back at the start of July, there was one in Australia and none in New Zealand. Well, there's now 156 in Australia and 79 in New Zealand. And they're certainly starting to explode in the United States and Europe, and there's even one in Kenya. So we might have to check that out in a little bit more detail in the next episode or two. Well, until next time, safe geocaching.